from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we'll continue our election coverage and meet the two candidates for California Superintendent of Public Instruction, Larry Aceves and Tom Torlakson. Both want to replace Jack O'Connell. Then at 9:30, we focus on the education platforms and positions of Jerry Brown and Meg Whitman, the two leading candidates for governor. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. And in this opening forum half hour, we're going to continue our ongoing election coverage and host the two candidates seeking the office of California Superintendent of Public Instruction. Former San Jose School District Superintendent Larry Aceves, who has served as both a principal and an administrator and a bilingual teacher, is running as an independent. And former high school teacher and coach Tom Torlakson, who has served in both the State Assembly and the State Senate, is running as a Democrat. And, this is a nonpartisan race, but I think the identification is independent and Democratic. Maybe we ought to get that straight. Both of us are joining us for this forum half hour. And welcome Larry Aceves, who's here with us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to be here.
And we also have Tom Torlakson with us from Sacramento. Good morning, Tom Torlakson.
Good morning.
So this is a nonpartisan race, but you have identified Larry as an independent, have you not?
I have. I actually was originally a Democrat, but after the primary decided, since this is a nonpartisan race, I wanted to make sure people had a choice, so I re-registered as an independent.
Okay. I just wanted to get that on the record. And Tom, you're running as a Democrat.
Well, I'm running as a Democrat and a consensus builder. I actually have the top Democratic leaders in the state supporting me and the top Republican leaders because they see me as a problem solver. So it is a nonpartisan office. The kids aren't Republicans or Democrats.
Well, let's talk about problem solving. And let me begin with you, Tom Torlakson. We're talking a lot about reform now with Waiting for Superman out. We've been talking about it here on the radio. But we know how difficult it is with simply getting revenue and funding. What are you going to do that's out of the box or imaginative to get more money?
Well, first of all, I've had a strong track record of reform to help education while being a state senator and legislator. We need to think out of the box. We have to get out of the box. And part of it is getting an innovative curriculum. I'm working with leaders in the technology field, like Barry Schuler, formerly from AOL, to get an innovative curriculum that uses computers and gets the students working in teams and gets them into problem solving rather than just taking multiple choice fill-in-the-dot tests. We also can save hundreds of millions of dollars by doing energy audits, getting solar on the rooftops of schools, and cutting down extra bureaucracy. We have far too many bureaucrats. We have 1,000 districts replicating a lot of services. We can save money there. And then I propose forming a very strong combination team with business and labor to tell the legislature and the governor, stop cutting and start rebuilding the schools' budgets.
Larry Aceves, where are you going to get more money?
Well, it is interesting to me to listen to someone who has been part of a system that's over the last 4 to 5 years cut $17 billion out of public education and then speaks about bureaucracy and saving spots by cutting educators. I think the issue for me more than anything else is that the public does not trust Sacramento these days. You know, for many of the people, the idea of trying to raise revenue through Sacramento has been very, very difficult because there's a big lack of trust. And I believe a lot of the districts locally can raise parcel taxes bond elections, which they have done fairly successfully. I think certainly we need to look at areas like oil severance taxes. And while there is an economy in eliminating some duplicated services, I think the question really becomes at what cost. And you've got to be very careful not just simply to come up with these silver bullet solutions, but really look at what does it take to run a school district. I think the adequacy lawsuit that was brought about by CSBA, AXA, and PTA really speaks to what does it take to educate students. It would be my effort, if when elected, to speak with the governor and try to get this resolved very quickly. You know, what does it take? How do we get there? We know for the next 2 to 3 years the budgets are going to be horrible in California. We need to live within what we have and make the best of what we have without, you know, necessarily throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Larry Seves, there's been concern, and a lot of it expressed on this program, about getting rid of bad teachers, especially the worst teachers, how tenure perhaps contributes to the problem. I know you have been critical of your opponent. We'll talk to Tom Tarlickson about this, about ties to the union. But you received, I believe, $1.4 million from the Association of California School Administrators, and there's concern that maybe we're really too top-heavy with administrators, too. What are you going to do about getting rid of bad administrators and getting rid of bad teachers?
Well, I think the system has been kind of frozen in place. When I talk about accountability and evaluation, it is about all. It is about teachers, about principals, about superintendents, and about boards. I mean, the system isn't just on the backs of teachers, and I've been very careful to say that from the beginning. But there are too many teachers that ought not to be teaching. There are too many principals that we really need to either retrain or get rid of. And the issue for me and for many of the superintendents has been that the teachers' union has been very resistant to accountability, very resistant to lessening the process of releasing a teacher. It took me over 2 years and $100,000 to fire one teacher. That's incredibly expensive.
When you were in San Jose.
When I was in San Jose. And right now there's 200 teachers sitting home drawing full pay in Los Angeles because nobody can figure out how to fire them. CTA has got to step up and be part of the solution. Likewise with principals, we have to make sure that they are good instructional leaders, that they're good collaborators, and that they can build teams around them. If not, they ought not to be principals.
Well, Tom Tarlickson, you've said that there should be, well, that 2 years for tenure is a right length of time, and yet can we really afford to give tenure to teachers that protects them from this kind of scrutiny that may be necessary? And again, I'd ask you to address, if you would, in connection with that, because I think they're linked, the $1 million that's come to you from the union, and actually I think close to more than $3 million independently spent on your behalf. That would seem to put in many people's minds the idea that you're beholden to CTA, and that means beholden to tenure.
Well, I think the Bay Area voters know me, and Contra Costa voters know me as an independent problem solver, and it's natural that I would have the support of teachers because I am a teacher. I teach at Los Medanos Community College currently. I taught high school science and nutrition and health for 10 years. I've been a coach for 25 years. So I am a teacher. I'm still active in the classroom. I'm not retired. I'm actively engaged in education. And no one wants an ineffective teacher on their faculty. Just like good cops don't want a bad cop on the police department, the vast majority of hardworking, valiantly working teachers are doing a great job day in and day out, and they too do not want someone who's ineffective, who's stealing from kids the education they deserve and should have. And so there are a number of programs that work, and to correct something, I did not say that the 2 years for tenure is the exact and forever right. I said it's not the issue to take on right at this moment. Most studies show that principals who do their homework, and I remember when I was a teacher, the principal came in and evaluated me, observed me for 20 minutes, half hour, wrote up not just two sentences, but a page of very thoughtful remarks, and we sat down and went over what I was doing well and what I needed to improve. The accountability programs that are working well have that kind of personal rapport, and the schools that are working well, such as San Francisco, they have a peer assistance review program, which involved teachers in helping put additional training and advice to teachers who are off track, and also to help pressure teachers out who are not fit for the profession anymore. So I am strongly for accountability, and I will bring the stakeholders together. One reason I have the support of a great number of administrators, as well as teachers, as well as business leaders and labor leaders, is because they believe I'm the one who can bring everyone to the table and hammer out a new accountability system that will be accountable for the resources provided by the school district, which was overwhelmingly one of the things that, you know, attracts teachers, is if you have well-funded schools and have all the resources you need, teachers are likely to stay and do really well. But get everybody at the table and hammer out a new accountability system from principals and Are they doing their job to evaluate teachers? One thing about the 2 years in tenure, they say that studies have examined the fact that most principals can tell which teachers are going to make it during the probationary period just after 1 year of watching them in their classrooms. And they do not have to grant tenure to the teachers that are going to be ineffective. And so this is where I think there's a weakness in the current system.
We're talking to Tom Tarlickson and Larry Aceves. Both are running for Superintendent of Public Instruction. I'm going to give out the phone number now. I'll ask both candidates another question, but you are welcome to join us with questions you may have or comments. And in fact, we welcome you and extend the phone lines to you now. It's toll-free. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls, and we welcome hearing from you. Again, it's toll-free from wherever you're listening to us, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. What do we do, Tom Tarlickson, about the failure of the race to the top, which has meant federal funding's been not extended to California?
Well, I believe the way it was handled in Sacramento was wrong. It was more of a push top-down. It wasn't built as a trusting, coalition-building, community-based effort in California. So that was something that was to our detriment. We also have trouble with the data tracking system, which is a computer system that's going to help us gain valuable data on student progress and learning progress and help us evaluate how to help students learn better from the test scores. The race to the top is good on the one side by having money and needs to be channeled more to focusing on what local communities can do to implement that. And I believe, as superintendent, I would have the ability to bring teachers and parent groups and administrators together and have a more unified front embracing some of the race to the top programs. I am glad that President Obama is focusing on career education. This has been one of the major issues I've brought out in this campaign. We need to have more relevancy to the workplace, more hope for students to see a job at the end of their learning and the relevancy of their learning. And so getting race to the top with a career technical component is really important. And also getting technology in our schools. The president has put some money out. I'm hoping, and I would advocate strongly for a massive increase in the amount of money for computers and smart boards, all the instruments that young people are using today in their communication and in their learning are needed in the workplace. But our schools are 47th in the nation, 47th in the nation in the use of technology. So I want to implement that program through Race to the Top. We can get some state money to match the federal money and help our schools get the computers and career tech programs they need.
And Larry Aceves, you've gone on record as saying you want the legislature to grant the superintendent authority to suspend provisions of labor contracts. Do you see that as really being viable?
Well, part of the issue, and I've been speaking mostly about schools that are struggling, the schools at the very, very bottom that have been on program improvement for 8, 10, 12 years and are not improving, then have a team come in that is basically sent as experts working with the school, working with a superintendent to put together a plan for a school. And when that plan is then brought forward, there are, in my own district, I had issues with provisions of the contract that would not allow for parts of the plan to be implemented. And so I think that's inexcusable. When it comes to a choice between adults and children and young people, I pick children and young people every time. And so what I was talking about was those provisions of contract in those schools that are struggling be suspended temporarily, that the superintendent be given power to suspend those until the school pulls itself out of the struggle that it's in. And, I think that's very reasonable. I know it's going to be a tough push because the whole issue of negotiated contracts is very much a union issue. And I'm not opposed to unions. I really support what they do. But when a contract gets in the way of children's learning, that contract has to be set aside.
We're going to go to our callers and emails here. Just let me get you on record here, both of you, if I may. Larry Aceves, I'll begin with you. Certainly the superintendent of public instruction has a bully pulpit. How would you use it?
Well, I think it is critical that as superintendent, I have credibility as an educator. You know, I've actually been in education for 32 years. I didn't go on leave of absence in 1980 and still call myself a teacher. So my issue of being a teacher, being an educator, being a practitioner is not questioned. And so I think my my working with the legislature, working with the new governor, would come from an area of knowledge, an area of strong background. And the idea of having the superintendent really talk about the good things that are going on in schools throughout the state, but also be willing to use the bully pulpit when schools are struggling, when there are blocks in the way of things getting done, making sure to speak up about that as well. We can't sugarcoat things and just pretend that everything's okay. It's got to change, and this position's got to be really the cheerleader, the coach, and the person who most speaks to what do we need to change.
Well, Tom Tarlickson, you said that you want to put a great emphasis, should you become superintendent, on recruiting and retraining qualified teachers. That would presumably also tie in with how you would use the bully pulpit?
Absolutely. And we have a huge, huge challenge right now because the cutbacks, which I have strenuously fought and voted against, have devastated the schools and created this avalanche of pink slips and layoff notices that, for young teachers, that's extremely demoralizing. But the bully pulpit is one thing, but also the ability to roll up sleeves and be a team leader and get in with the legislative process, the leaders of both houses, and with the governor, and sit down and solve the problem. I have a success track record of being able to solve large, complex problems for schools and for other issues by building bipartisan teams in the legislature, by putting outside pressure on, which you can do through the bully pulpit, but you can't really do that by yourself. You need business to weigh in, you need labor to weigh in, you need parents to weigh in. I'm the author of the largest school construction program ever in the United States to modernize our schools, and I forged the $36 billion plan through an effort to get Republicans and Democrats to work together. I did the same thing for the nation's largest after-school program, which I authored when I was in the Senate, by bringing Republicans and Democrats together. And the bully pulpit will be good, but we already have reform efforts. You mentioned in your previous question with Larry about some of the reform efforts. There are known and proven formulas, and one of those is the Quality Education Improvement Act. A school in Livermore is just one great example, the Maryland Avenue Elementary School. They've increased tremendously, and the teachers are involved as partners in the learning of those students, and the principal and teachers work with respect and collaboration, and they use test data. They're being held accountable, willingly working together to learn what the best lesson plans are. So I would put a spotlight on the successes of the Quality Education Improvement Act, which has invested $3 billion in 400 schools that have all had fantastic improvement. So we have reforms that are working. We need to multiply them and get the public behind them and build a strong team to implement them.
And let's bring our public into this discussion. We'll go first to Todd in Menlo Park. Good morning.
Oh, hi there. I have a question about the tenure system. I think so my kids are in public school here in Menlo Park, and they have some really great teachers. And I think most people would agree that having a really good teacher is the absolute most important thing in ensuring that your kids have a good education. You can spend whatever money you want on infrastructure. If they don't have a good teacher, it's not going to happen. So my question is, why 2 years? That seems like an absurdly low number to grant tenure based on. It seems like if you look at any other field, something more like 10 or 15 years would make a lot more sense. Can you explain to me what the rationale is behind 2 years and whether or not you think that's a good number?
All right. I'm going to have to go to you on this, Tom Tarlickson, because, as I said, I think you are on record as saying that, well, as you said this morning, that tenure should not be as important an issue as other issues that certainly would preempt tenure. Why 2 years as you see it?
Sure. The issue of tenure shouldn't be the first issue to deal with because it's just going to be divisive and it's not going to get to the real heart of the caller's question, which is how do you recruit and retain high-quality teachers to stay in the profession and not leave? And so the tenure system goes back to lots of legislative negotiation long ago. it is a place where most principals can figure out with 99% accuracy who's going to be a good teacher or not within the first year, the first 18 months. And if the principal is keeping records well and counseling that person well, they can take the individuals who need a little bit of improvement, a little bit of coaching, mentoring, and improve them so they will be effective teachers and not be a problem later. And they can eliminate the teachers, dismiss the teachers who they know are not going to be effective. But many principals aren't doing that homework. And so the issue is more of how do we set up an evaluation system where everybody agrees on what's to be measured. And test data, figuring out the right test and the right use of that data should be part of a teacher's evaluation. And it should be easier to get rid of bad teachers. But right now, we have a system where it is possible to do that. In fact, my opponent in another debate we had said it's not that hard to fire a teacher who has not performed well. And I've talked to principals and administrators across the state who say if you document well, even after the tenure, you can have teachers who are ineffective and performing poorly and robbing students of the education they deserve moved out of the profession without spending the exorbitant amounts of money that my opponent cited just a few minutes ago.
Well, let's hear from your opponent.
I think the bigger challenge is getting teachers to stay in teaching and come into teaching.
Yeah, Larry Aceves.
Yeah, see, let me respond first to the issue of getting rid of teachers. The process is very burdensome. What I said was it's not impossible to fire bad teachers. It being impossible and being streamlined are two different conversations, which I would love to get into deeper. The concern for me with tenure is that tenure guarantees you a job for life. And after 2 years, I've been a principal. I have been an administrator. My opponent has not. So the idea of how easy it is to evaluate teachers is hearsay on his part. The problem with tenure, even as it began in the college systems, was it had to be earned. It wasn't just given after 2 years of being in the classroom. And for schools in Los Angeles, for example, where they have 75 teachers in a school and one principal, how easy do you believe it is to try to get rid of a bad teacher, one that's maybe not bad but marginal in the first couple of years, and then they just hang on for life? The tenure system needs to be looked at very seriously, and it needs to be stretched out to at least 5 to 7 years so the teachers really do earn the ability to keep a job. If we hang on to tenure at all, it's got to be moved out far enough so that a principal can really take the time to evaluate and come back and support teachers or make the decision that they can't make it.
We're coming up on the break here, only a few seconds really to answer a very important question, but I'd like each of you on the record on this. Do you think that charter schools are a part of the equation of closing the achievement gap? This comes from a listener named Casey, and if so, how? Unfortunately, quickly, Larry, if you could. Larry.
Yes, they are part of the equation. Good quality charter schools are great role models and great best practices to look at for all of our schools. So they need to be part of how do we get the best practices for all our students.
And on that same question, Tom Tarlickson.
There are wonderful charter schools, and they should be looked at as models and the best practices scaled up and used throughout the system. There are also great magnet schools, other types of public schools, partnership schools with business on career education. So those schools which are performing in an outstanding way are part of how to close the achievement gap. We need to keep students excited and engaged in the learning, and whether that happens in a charter school or a magnet school or a partnership school or your neighborhood school, shouldn't matter. We should make sure that we are guaranteeing that engaging curriculum and having our youth prepared for the real world they'll be entering soon.
My thanks to both of you for being with us this morning. Good luck to both of you in the campaign. The voters will decide. Tom Tarlickson, Larry Aceves, both want to be the next superintendent of public instruction in California. When we return, we'll find out what Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown have to say about education. I'm Michael Krasny.